Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the Short Thing today. It is December 9th. Warren and Ryan here with view of picks for the NFL weekend ahead. I saw some trends out there that I'd like to share. Also have some player props that I've been riding the last handful of weeks that I'd like to share as well. So you know what that means. If I start to give out the player props, then this week, get ready for the losers. But hopefully they continue, and I think they should. You can check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the iHeartRadio app under the podcast tabs. And we'll be back on Monday, obviously, for a full recap of the weekend. Ryan, how is it going over there? I know it's been a little bit of a tough week.
It's been a tough week, but like I said on Monday, hey, you know what? We're making it. We'll be better for it on the other side, and just keep on chugging.
Indeed, the weekend could get brightened up for you because we got a big game in the NFL this weekend with the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington football team. Cowboys have a couple game lead in the division. Washington's won 4 in a row, playing much better defensively, pretty much the catalyst behind that. They're still a minus 51 in the point differential, but defense playing much better, leading to wins. They win this game, but they play 2 out of the next 3 weeks. Don't they have all division games left, Washington?
Yes. Yeah. All division games. We got the Cowboys, Giants, Cowboys, Eagles, Giants, or something like that.
Yeah. So all division games left. So division rate, I still think the Cowboys are going to win the division, but if Washington wins this week, that can make it a lot tighter. Cause the Eagles, they have I think they're on their bye this week.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, this is the last round of bye weeks. The Colts, Patriots, Eagles, and there's another team on a bye that I do not know. But the Cowboys, they've definitely are not looking like themselves when they did in the early stretch of the season. They've lost 2 of their last 3. They had a nice a win against the Saints that we both said last week should have won. It was a get-right game. The Saints, Taysom Hill is horrible, just god-awful quarterback. In fact, they still have him kept throwing with the busted out.
The hammer finger, whatever they were calling it.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is there. But, like, you can throw. I did think it was a little smart. I give jumping credit that they did keep the running plays for Taysom Hill in the second half so they couldn't make adjustments on those. That's a little bit of a shrewd move.
Yeah.
But he just cannot throw the ball. And the offense, and mainly Dak, sans the Falcons game, has really not looked like he was before he left the game for the calf injury. And now there is some speculation out there that they still are limiting him a couple days in practice. And he said that he needs to regain his footwork, that his footwork's getting a little sloppy, which could go into that. And he said, my footwork's sloppy because I'm not doing the drills that I was doing before because of the calf. And when you hear that, that does make a lot of sense. If you're saying I'm not practicing my footwork and then it's getting sloppy during the games, I would say that that's one of the reasons why. And he has been, like, he was fine against the Raiders, but he wasn't like he was earlier on the season. And the whole point of sitting him against the Vikings was that, hey, he's going to get better. This is going to heal him. And he's going to be able to get back to play. And he's, for them to achieve the goals that they have this season, they're going to have to get that calf right, or he's going to have to play like he did against the Giants, Patriots, Panthers, and Eagles.
Yeah, it's definitely been the tale of two quarterbacks for Dak. And this team has gone 100% how he's gone. Since he's come back from the injury, or at least come back from sitting out the one game, there's been a lot of throws that he's just missed where, you know, the first few weeks of the season before he sat out against the Vikings, I mean, the guy was putting balls in a spot that only his receivers could get him. Just absolutely, you know, dishing out dimes left and right. And that hasn't been the case thus far since then. And, you know, it makes sense. Like you said, it makes 100% sense that that maybe his footwork isn't where it needs to be because he's not able to get the right reps in and the right practice in during the week if that calf is limiting him a little bit. So, you know, he's got to figure it out, and the Cowboys got to figure it out pretty quickly. You know, I would tend to agree that they probably still have the division all but locked up, but you know, that's not the goals for this season. It's just to win the division. They had, you know, especially the way the season started and even coming to this season, they had Super Bowl aspirations, and the way he's playing right now and the way that offense is going right now, that's not going to be the case. I don't care how good that defense is playing, because you got some really, really good teams in the NFC, you know, with the Packers, the Cardinals, you know, if you want to sprinkle the Rams in there, the Bucks, obviously. So they've got some good high powered offenses that defense is going to have to try to keep up with. And if they're not able to do their job, then the offense has got to try to get in a shootout. And I don't know if Dak is equipped for a shootout right now.
I mean, when did you say the Raiders game was a little bit of a shootout? I know they lost at the end, but he's still...
I would definitely say it was a shootout, but it in almost a different fashion. Like, it was like a sloppy shootout. Whereas if you, you know, you get into one with the Packers or the Cardinals or something, it's going to be like bang, 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 where it may be a little bit more crisp, where I just feel like the way the Raiders got it done isn't exactly how you might get it. You might see it done with the Buccaneers or the Packers, some of these top teams in the NFC.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're, I understand what you're saying there. But look, I just think it's also a point of that with the last against the Chiefs, they didn't have Amari Cooper, and then CeeDee Lamb got concussed in the first half. So you're out two of your receivers. Then Cooper misses again the Raiders game, and Lamb also misses the Raiders game. So you have to look at it like, hey, they're without their two of their best receivers, and they drive the offense, and look at what they did a little bit better against the Saints defense. That's solid. I know they were missing a bunch of players, but they play hard. I would say they're coached very well. They're still a tough defense to go against. So that's another thing we have to look at when they've been at full strength with the receiving core, because look, even if you're a deep receiving core, like I like Cedric Wilson. I think if a team's looking for a third receiver next year, like he's a fourth receiver on this Cowboys team, but he could clearly be a number two or number three for a team out there. When he gets bumped up to that, like he could do it for a game, but the talent drop from him, from CeeDee Lamb to Cooper, is pretty significant. So he's also going without those two guys. And I think that's also a reason why, especially the Chiefs and then the Raiders for a lesser extent, why they cover, because those two guys are just so good that there is going to be some drop off no matter who is out there, no matter who the quarterback is.
Yeah, no, I agree. Those are a couple great points there. You know, it's just if you know, especially we see the continued decline of Zeke, you know, and Tony Pollard's been great for him, but this offense kind of starts and ends with Dak and those wide receivers and making sure those guys are getting open and making sure he's hitting those guys when he needs to. So, you know, it's as much talent as they have, and, you know, they're finally going to be getting everybody back, it seems like, here and have all cylinders, you know, clicking and rolling. It really boils down to, I think now that everyone's kind of going to be back healthy, they're going to be all systems go. I think this puts a big magnifying glass on Dak and maybe on that calf as well to see, hey, is this guy going to be able to get the job done? And you know, not like there's another option, because there isn't. So it's really just, you know, he's got to figure it out, and he's got to make sure he delivers the ball and gets the ball out on time and gets, you know, the offensive line. Obviously, having Tyron Smith back is going to help that a ton as well. He's not going to be running for his life quite as much. So I think it's going to put a big magnifying glass on Dak to see, hey, is he healthy and can he get the job done, even if he is going to be banged up? Because what's the old adage? At this point, everyone's banged up. Everyone's hurt, yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, hey, can you kind of nut up and get the job done?
Well, especially can the calf handle the bad FedEx Field turf or whatever. It's not called FedEx Field anymore, is it? Or is it still FedEx Field?
Yeah, still FedEx Field.
Okay, because didn't Robert Smith de-invest or whatever?
Yeah, he sold his shares, but it's still FedEx Field.
Okay, I didn't know if they were still doing that. But, I mean, the FedEx Field turf is a big
Yeah.
Can the calf handle that? But you mentioned Zeke. The thing about, like, Zeke clearly is about 50%. Like, he's banged up big time.
Yeah.
And that is a big – I mean, that's a big reason why he's playing so poorly. Like, you got to obviously give him a lot of credit for still being out there. But you could just see when he's running that his knee is really, really affecting him. And because earlier in the season, look, he wasn't breaking off the big type of 15, 20 yarders we knew about Zeke, I don't know, 3 years ago. But he looked fresh. Like, he looked a lot better than he did last year. And then he got the knee banged up. And for the last, I don't know, handful of weeks, 3-4 weeks, he's really been a shell of himself out there. And like you've been saying Tony Pollard this year, I was on the Tony Pollard train last year. The thing about Tony Pollard is that really he wasn't, minus the touchdown run last week. And I know you can't really take out, you're like, oh, it's Butch Davis. Oh, Butch Davis said when Jamal Lewis ran for like 296 yards in a game against the Browns, the record. Well, if you take out the 270-yard touchdown runs, we held them to 100 yards rushing on whatever. You can't do that. But minus the touchdown run, Tony Pollard, I mean, he wasn't really that effective in the run game yesterday or last week really either. So the run was, the biggest run was the CeeDee Lamb one. But other than that, the run game minus that one was a little bit taken away, but they were just kind of just pounding away. And even the Tony Pollard run, you didn't think he was going to be able to get any yards on it. It was the pitch play that looked like they had covered pretty nicely, and he found a hole and got to the edge and took it to the house. But
and some Zeke, terrible angles and tackling by the Saints secondary.
Yes, but the whole thing is Zeke is not taking that pitch play to the house.
Correct.
Tony Pollard is going to be the guy that could take it to the house. So you got to figure out something. I mean, they threw the ball 40 times. So I still think they're going to throw it a bunch this week. That's who they are as a team. They do get lucky that Montez Sweat got the Rona. Yeah. So he's going to be out without, then Chase Young's been out for the year. So that's a help for the Cowboys. But as you know, their third down defense has gotten a lot better. They've regressed to the mean there. And I think the Cowboys defense is still, I know DeMarcus Lawrence is going to be playing more. Randy Gregory is supposed to play this week. The Trayvon Diggs, look, was on a torrid pace. He slowed down, and I don't know how much PFF rankings you look at, or I don't know. I'm always intrigued by them, but it's also kind of, it's just a good data point, I think, or just something to look at. But like Trayvon Diggs, if you look at him, his rankings in the overall for cornerbacks, he's like 100th out of 110 graded corners. Like he's ranked one of the worst in the leagues. He's just a boomer bust guy, and right now he's been he hasn't got a lot of boom going on there. So
he's the Ryan Howard of defensive backs.
but we'll have to, it'll be interesting. And look, Heinicke, I'm interested to see how he plays. We've said it, he's prone to the mistake here or there, but we'll have to see what happens and how the Cowboys rush defense is going to be able to handle Antonio Gibson. I think that's also a big storyline.
Yeah, Antonio Gibson's been really good. Like I said, first in the NFC in rushes. I think he's only averaging about 3.5 or 3.9 yards per carry, but that's not the part that I'm really stressed about. The part is, I'm not really stressed about it any of it. The really good thing is that Scott Turner and Ron Rivera kind of are just letting him do his thing. You know, they'll hand the ball off to him 20, 25, 30 times and kind of give him the lion's share of all those carries. He ran the ball every time except for one time last week. So even if that average isn't fantastic, you know, he's still racking up the yards and still churning those legs and still getting a good bulk of the carries. Doesn't go backwards too many times. And so I think that run defense is going to be tested quite a bit for the Cowboys. And I think this is going to be a big time matchup and a big time game. I don't see it being a blowout one way or the other. With that said, you know, I won't be surprised if it is a blowout one way or the other, but I think it's going to be a hard-fought battle. And as good as the Cowboys are and as good as Washington's been playing, I think this is going to be one that people are going to be talking about for a while.
All right. So this game goes into one of the trends that I've seen. The trend is starting in week 10, division games go under the total. It was the last three seasons, they would go under the total about 60%. So far through week 10, we've had 16 divisional games or from week 10 to week 13. So in the last 3 weeks, we've had 16 divisional games. The total, those games have gone under at a 75% clip. 12 have gone under, 4 have gone over. So this week, we have 7 divisional matchups. We have 7 divisional matchups. We have Browns, Ravens, Tennessee, Jacksonville, obviously the one we just talked about, Dallas and Washington, Atlanta, Carolina, Chicago, Green Bay, LA, and Arizona. That's all the 7.
Yeah.
So those are the divisional matchups. And some of them, I mean, Browns, Ravens, we already saw them 2 weeks ago play. It was 16-10. Like, I don't think 42, that's probably numbers right on the line. I will say, if there is a game that I do think goes over, I think Carolina-Atlanta is the one at 42. That's the one I would say I would be most worried about here for that. Because the Bears and Chicago's 43. I don't think the Bears are going to score that much. Dallas, Washington's 48. I don't think it gets to 48 points. Tennessee, Jacksonville's around 43. Oh, Vegas and the Chiefs. That's all. That's the last one. That's around 48 that's 48 as well. So it's sitting at a 75% clip this week, and there's 7 games out there. So that is a trend that I saw that I think is also interesting. And then, of course, we have the I don't have the year-to-date numbers on the teams that didn't cover versus the teams that covered. You take the team that didn't cover against that, but that's I think that's still doing pretty. It's doing pretty good this year.
Yeah, so I got one more. So I've been on the referee trends a little bit this year. So with that Bears-Packers game, Ron Torbert, who is the official for this week, his games are 10-2 on the under. So just another little data point.
What game's he on?
The Bears-Packers.
Okay.
He'll be on that game, and like I say, he's 10-2 so far. His games are 10-2 on the under. So, you know, if you're gonna lean one way or you're gonna use a couple different trends to help you make a pick, you know, that's probably going to be something that that you want to look at.
Okay. All right. And before we get to picks, these are the two player props that I've pretty much wrote all year that I've been pleased with. Lenny Fournette, receiving yards and receptions. Yards, he is receptions, I should say. It's hit 7 out of 9 weeks. So he's played 9 games. It's hit 7 out of 9 weeks. It has hit receiving yards. He's hit 4 of the last 5 weeks. And reception-wise, he's getting 7 catches a game. Yeah. 6-7 catches a game. And his receiving props, his catches is only like 3.5. They bumped it up 2 weeks ago to 4.5. But the thing about Fournette is these catches. We had a heartbreaker against the Colts. That the one that lost was he had 7 catches for 31 yards and his prop was 31.5. So his receiving sits around 31. This week it's 36.5. They're playing the Bills. I'm gonna take the over on his catches and the over on his yards. Sometimes I like to do the alt lines. Uh-huh. I sprinkle a little more at 6 catches or 7 catches. But that's been one that has been hitting this year that has been pretty good. And I always like doing the receptions as a cover because I'm pretty confident he's going to get 4 receptions. It's always, is he going to be able to get more yards? Because he doesn't really get a lot of yards sometimes on the receiving. They're like 4 or 5 yarder. But yeah, that's one. And then the other one that I have is Nick Chubb. Obviously, this you're going to say, oh, it's a homer, but his receiving yards every week, this is pretty crazy. His receiving yards sit at about 7.5 to 8.5. I think I talked about this last year, didn't I? Or not?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay. So his receiving yards is under 10 pretty much every single week. And it has hit 7 out of 9 times this season because he missed a couple games. It has hit now the last 3 weeks in a row. There was a little run there where it missed. It had three losses in a row, but we recovered. So he gets at least one catch a game. That's going to be about 7-8 yards. And then now they're throwing it a little bit more. So he gets a second catch and he gets second or third target. And he gets that for probably 3 or 4 yards. Against the Ravens last week or before the bye, he had 23 yards receiving. Against the Lions, he had 14 on two catches. He's always going to get around 8 or 9. Against the Bengals, he had 26. He had two catches. It's hit the last four games he's played in. So I like Chubb over whatever his receiving yards is, which is 5, 6, 7.5. It's under 10 for sure. So that's the one bet that I have. Those are the two, like, auto. I'm like, hey, these are the props that I'm locked in on each week. So those are the two out there, and they hit it a pretty good, clip.
Yeah. Whenever you can find a good player prop that you can almost, you know, bet and forget, that's always, huge. I don't know. There's part of me that always second guesses player props. I'll play some every now and then, but it's not a weekly thing for me. Maybe I'll take a look at these two you get, because you think about the Leonard Fournette one, technically, Giovanni Bernard's supposed to be that back that catches the ball out of the backfield. And that hasn't been the case. It's been all Lenny, Super Bowl Lenny. He's been doing it all for him, which has been huge for him and great for his career. Everyone always makes a joke. You feel like Leonard Fournette's like 30 or 33 when the guy's still a young buck. And so if he's able to be a multi-purpose back for the Bucks, he's going to be able to, stick around for a lot longer.
Yeah. Well, he's been working with Tom Brady a lot on those checkdowns, because Ronald Jones was out last week. Don't know the status on Jones this week, but they've been working a lot. My buddy Brandon said him and Brady have been working a lot on those checkdowns. And so that's why that's why he's been getting a lot of those there. But no, I'm a big player props guy. The worst thing about the player props too is you can see how the game flow is going for your guy. Yeah. And when you know it's done, it's done. Like it's a game where you gotta be mentally strong there on hoping that if you take, say, I don't know, like a if you take like a fourth receiver to get like 20 yards, you better get that on one catch or you know it's done. Like the worst is when you look at it and you got like 25.5 and he's at 24 and he's got like two catches and you're like, well, that's probably it for the day. That happened to me last year in the second quarter. One of them just got cooked there. But no, I'm a big player props guy. Like tonight, Deontay Johnson is now turning into like the number one receiver. His is only 81 yards. He's hit over 81 yards in the last four games. I like that. I like Deontay Johnson over 81 receiving yards for tonight. So that's the one I will be I'll be taking, because as much as Big Ben is a statue, he still can find his way to throw it to Deontay Johnson.
No doubt. No, agreed.
Hey, you know, you think Justin Jefferson's going to have a big night tonight? He had a big one last week, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He had almost 200 yards. He had a touchdown. No Adam Thielen. The only question is, yards. Yeah, the only question is, you get primetime Kirk Cousins. So who knows what that's going to bring. And B, are the Steelers going to do what the Lions didn't do last week, which was, hey, let's just go ahead and cover Justin Jefferson and make sure that he doesn't beat us, because the Lions didn't do that. He still beat them. They ended up winning the game on a last second touchdown, which was fortunate for them. But, when you have Adam Thielen out, you can kind of just zero in your defense on Justin Jefferson, making sure that's the guy that doesn't beat you.
Because if you think he's going to get 10 catches tonight, that's plus 295.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to force feed him.
Try and force feed him, and that's one. His even money one is 8.
So I didn't know if you're going yards. I would take the yard. What's his yards at? Probably his
yard. 94.
Yeah, 94. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might, 10 catches, 94 yards. I think he could do that. Poof. See, this is why. this is what I do. I put myself in a mental pretzel every single time. Every single time.
Excuse me, but no, this is what I'm looking at, and then I'll be like, oh, 10 catches. I should take it or whatever it is. At plus 295. Do a little double whammy there. I will say the last time I did a double, I thought Odell was going to go off, and he didn't. He had a couple of bad catches there. But all right, picks for the week. Last week, finally got off the 2-3 boat, went 3-2, and I'm now 37-28 on the no, what, not 30s, 38-27 on the season. 38. That is what I'm at. That should equal 65. I wrote it down. Wrote it down. 38-27 on the season. How did you do last week?
I also went 3-2. So that puts me at sorry, I didn't put my record down for last week. So I was 29-29-2 going into the week. So I went 3-2. So now I'm 32-31-2. Finally above 500 for the first time.
Is that still above 500 with two ties?
You know, probably not. Yeah, it's got to be.
What is it?
I've won more games than I've lost. That's above 500.
But how many games have you totally picked? Because the ties are, what's your record? 32-29-2?
32-31-2.
No.
32-31-2.
Let's go to the calculator.
Like I said, if I've won more games than I've lost, that's above 500.
You're at 49% with unwins because of ties.
Okay, so we're getting there.
Okay, all right. Before picks, here are some trends that I. This is ESPN.com. Their trends. This is really not groundbreaking. Away teams this year. You know, we talked about how away teams were doing pretty good. Away teams against the spread this year are 108-85. That's 55.9% winning.
Yeah.
Which is pretty shocking. Favorites this season, not even home favorites, just favorites in general, 45%. So underdogs are about 55% winning. Mm-hmm. And then away favorites, they're winning at a 53% clip. Away underdogs are winning at 59%. So some pretty staggering numbers there, which also does not bode well for your boy this week with what I've got. Because home underdogs are hitting at about a 46% clip, and I got four home underdogs. Or four home favorites, sorry. They're hitting at a 41% clip, and I got four of them this week.
Oof.
Which made me definitely maybe I should rethink the strategy. But my picks, look, I'm taking Minnesota tonight. This is on the teams that didn't cover. Versus the teams that did cover. Steelers covered last week. Vikings did not cover. So I'm going with the Vikings at home. I don't really like that, but we'll take it. I'm taking Atlanta plus 2.5 at Carolina. Tennessee minus 9 against Jacksonville. Julio Jones coming back. So hopefully the Titans offense gets moving. And the Titans, I think, were on a bye week last week.
Yeah, I got the Titans at 8.5.
Okay, 8.5 then. We'll take that. 8.5. I'm going to take Tampa minus 3.5 against the Bucks.
Yeah.
And then my final pick is Arizona minus 2.5 against the Rams. So those are my five picks.
So this is going against the trend of teams that covered last week versus teams that didn't. I'm going to take the Lions plus 8.5. I don't think they went outright. They keep games close. They play ugly. Jamal Williams has been, you know, good while DeAndre Swift has been out. Speaking of, this just triggered a memory. You saw DeAndre Swift's best game right in front of your eyes. He's a good running back.
I didn't see his best game. He had a better game against the Steelers.
Did he have a better game? Well, no, because what do you have against the Steelers? His
he had 116 yards rushing against the Browns. He had one run.
So he had 33 carries for 130 yards against the Steelers. Good for a 3.9 average.
Yeah, and he had four
rounds. He had 136 yards rushing on 14 carries, 9.7 average. Yeah, he did have a 57-yard run, but what did you just say? You can't take that run away from him.
No, he didn't. He didn't. Look, I mean, he had one big run in that game. That was it. And maybe a 10-yarder after that.
14 carries, 136 yards. Pretty good game. Pretty good.
He had a 57-yarder.
Exactly. took it to the house. He had that big run. Anyway, sorry, got sidetracked there. Anyway, DeAndre Swift's still a good running back. The Lions.
He's now well on. He's now up to 4 yards a carry. We're getting. He's getting better.
Yeah,
he's,
absolutely.
He's the Browns game really helped him.
It's a shame that he's injured because this is DeAndre Swift's season right now, where you're just 3 yards in a cloud of dust, where you're just pounding away at guys in the cold weather.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
I'm going to take the Titans -8.5 as well. I'm on that as the Jaguars. They stink. Urban's got to go. I mean, I know it's only been 1 year, but it's just that team doesn't even like they don't even have any bright spots. I know the roster's bad. You know, some of your stars like James Robinson and some of the I mean, I guess he's really the only star they had coming into this season.
Trevor Lawrence.
From last season to this season, he's looked like he's regressed. Trevor Lawrence doesn't like he's progressing at all. So I think Urban's got to go. I think he needs to go, either go back to his barn.
You see some of those videos out of the locker room, though. Those guys look like they have bought into him.
But then you look at what's going on the field, and it's just everything looks like you can tell when a team just isn't run very well. And I feel like that's that with the Jaguars. I don't know. Rewind. What 6 or 8 weeks ago, and I was saying you got to give him at least 3 years, 3-4 years to get his, you know, get this roster turned over and get some dudes in there. I don't know, man. I don't know. It's really maybe I'm stuck in the middle here, but I just don't know that that's a well organized or well ran team right now with Urban at the helm. But neither here nor there. I got Titans -8.5. I'm going to say Green Bay -12.5. You get primetime Aaron Rodgers. I think he's going to try to embarrass the Bears. I know Justin Fields is coming back, so that gives him a good shot to at least keep it close. But I'm still going to take the Packers to win by probably 2 touchdowns. I'm going to take the football team +4 for probably the last time this season. They've treated me well the last 2 times I've taken them, the last 3 times I've taken them. We'll give her one good go and then we'll pack it up for the season. I'm back in the football team. And then I'm actually on the other side. I'm going to be on the Rams +2.5 against the Cardinals. They are the, road dog. And I was using some of my, so Carl Sheffers, he's going to be the official here, and road dogs against the spread are 8-4 in games that he is the referee for, 7-2. They're 7 road underdogs are 7-2 on games that he is the referee for. And I think maybe the Rams kind of finally found their footing against last week. I know it was against the Jaguars, but things were kind of clicking again. So maybe they get back to being a good team, but we'll see. But I am going to take the Rams +2.5. I think they might win outright.
All right. Because that NFC is pretty stacked up. It is also, as we've talked about though, you got your teams at the top, and then after that, there's a great divide, between if you're good or mediocre.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And then I mean the AFC playoff picture is.
Would you put the Cowboys in the good or the mediocre crowd?
I put them in the good crowd. Would you? Which one would you put them in?
Yeah, I mean I think they're good when they're playing well, but they're just not playing well right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'd still put him in the good category.
I put him in that second tier. You put Tampa, Green Bay,
and Arizona, probably the best.
Yeah, and Arizona in tier one, and then tier two is probably where the Cowboys. You could put the Rams in there.
That's it.
And that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're definitely on the bottom half of the five teams that have 8 wins or more.
Yeah.
They're probably fourth or fifth, but they're still considered the good on the good side. Isn't it amazing that the Lions won a game? They got their first win in week, 13? And they weren't the first team eliminated from playoff contention.
Yes, that is.
That's and what does it say? This is also, I don't understand how these playoff scenarios work. Because the Texans are eliminated from the first team eliminated from the playoffs, and they are 15th in the AFC. They have the tiebreaker over Jacksonville. So how Jacksonville is still a potentially spot in how they potentially have a spot in the playoffs and they are losing a tiebreaker? I don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
But that is the crazy. That's the craziness of the NFL. And then one other thing on the NFL. Look, I cannot I can't do people already talking about a Brady Belichick Super Bowl. Like, it's not going to happen. I'm sorry. That's not going to happen. Because they beat a Bills team in a windstorm. We're all in. Everyone's all in on the Patriots. Like, they have a recipe to win. It's run the ball and play good defense. But Mac Jones is going to have to make some plays sooner or later. That's the whole thing. And can he do that if he's in a windy game in January or whatever? If they're now, if they get the one seed, then I think it might be a little bit of a different story. But I can't do this Brady Belichick stuff right now in the Super Bowl.
I mean, it's the ESPN, the First Takes, the Undisputeds or whatever. That's, I mean, they need a talking point, and that's what they're going to go with. I think right now, I mean, obviously they're the one seed. The Patriots are the bell of the ball when it comes to the AFC. I just don't know that the Bucks are going to be, I don't think they're the favorite right now to make it to the Super Bowl. Like, you know, whatever Vegas says, who knows? But just the eye test, I don't know if they're going to be the odds on favorite to make it there. So look, I get it. Everyone wants it. Everyone thinks
I don't want it. I don't want it.
It, you know, it's just like everyone wanted the Kobe LeBron finals. We never got it. People want the Brady Belichick Super Bowl. And, you know, this one, even though Brady's already won a Super Bowl without Belichick, I think this one would be, you know, to kind of finally crown the one of, was it Brady or was it Belichick? Even though everyone's very clearly sees it was both of them. You know what I mean? If Belichick has anybody other than maybe Peyton Manning, he doesn't win five Super Bowls or six Super Bowls with Tom Brady. With the Patriots. So look, it'd be fun. I don't think I'd be the worst thing in the world, but you know, it's inevitable. People are going to talk about it and want it.
You know, McDaniels doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah.
He really does not get enough credit. Like,
yeah. Cause Belichick's a defensive guy.
He doesn't do anything on the offense. McDaniels does everything offensively. Like, McDaniels, whenever his name, like, I will say this, I wanted him over Stefanski. I like Stefanski. I think he's a good coach. I'm glad we got him. But I wanted McDaniels over Stefanski. I think McDaniels, you get him as a head coach, he'd be great. I also should have realized that McDaniels was wanting to do some revenge when they played the Browns. He was pulling out the bag of tricks because they picked Stefanski over him. But McDaniels, he doesn't get any credit. Or he doesn't get enough credit for what he does with the offense. And coming around for head coaching jobs, everyone's like, oh, look what he did at Denver. Look what he did at Denver. That was like 10 years ago, 9 years or 9 years ago. No, guys can change. He was young. Now, would he want to take another job after leaving New England? I don't know. But on the right job, I think he would. I would be lining up to try and hire McDaniels because he's great. And he's shown you now, okay, look, he's got a rookie quarterback. He's able to put a pretty good offense with him. He did it with Brady, and he when Cam was in there last year, he couldn't throw the ball, but they still were a decent team, and they had no weapons. Like, why would you not want McDaniels running your offense and being your head coach?
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll have to see what happens there. All right, some NBA stuff. We'll lay off the college football. Oh, do you have a pick for Army Navy, or not?
Army. Okay. Probably Army. Let's see. What's the,
I think it's 6.5,
7.5 right now for Army. Yeah. We'll ride with that. We'll go Army minus 7.5. Let's do it.
All right. I'll take the under in that. I think it's hit like 17 years in a row, but
34.5.
We'll take the under still. I think last year was like 32 when it still hit. Last week I had a tough week. I went, 3-5. But for the regular season or whatever, the whole season before bowls, I went 80-62-2 in college football. So a strong Saturdays.
Yeah, I finished up 4-4 last week. So my record overall was 84-59 on the season.
All right, good. So we did good job in the old college football. All right, one last thing before we go, or some the NBA. Right now, the little Mavericks, I do think this is, they had a tough one on Tuesday night against the Nets, a terrible choke job, beat a weakened Grizzlies team last night. But we've talked about this before. is that, okay, so coming, do the Mavs right now sit at 12-12. They're in seventh place. A negative point differential, which is never good. If you're looking at the Mavs right now, their whole strategy is, hey, we put this team together. They have not made big roster moves since the Porzingis trade. And you know that coming in January, that Porzingis trade is 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So they're going to have pretty much the same roster minus Seth Curry for Josh Richardson. Then they bring in Reggie Bullock. I always thought his name was Bullock, but it's Bullock, I guess. Just minor pieces around there. And yeah, you could say the Seth Curry trade didn't work out and he was a big piece. But the core now is pretty much just Luka and KP. And I guess you have to say Tim Hardaway Jr. There's been no really big significant roster move since then. And it's like, okay, can these two guys play well together? Are they going to shoot well from three? And is that going to be able to win us a playoff series? This team has major flaws. And the other problem is you have one trade piece that teams would want, and that's in Jalen Brunson. And you're not going to want to trade him. The Mavs are, roster construction-wise, they're stuck. They are right in the middle there, and it's Luka's going to have to try and carry them. I know they were playing well before KP got hurt, and then Luka's been banged up, and they've struggled lately. They've lost 7 out of the last 10, but the whole roster just they can't. I don't know how they really improve the roster.
Yeah, this doesn't scream championship roster by any means. A lot of talk has been made about Luka and kind of how he's not exactly in playing shape still to, you know, at this point where he admitted as much either last night or the night before that, you know, he's got to get in better shape. And, you know, I don't, like you said, they have maybe one trade piece. So it's not like they can go out and kind of revamp this roster like we've seen them do in the past in season to try to go make a run at things. So they're kind of stuck in the middle, kind of stuck in this, you know, purgatory of, you know, did we pay Porzingis too much? Are we paying him too much? Do we give too much up for him? You know, there's a lot of pieces here that are good. Tim Hardaway, when he's playing really well, I mean, things are great for the Mavs. Dorian Finney-Smith, you know, he's kind of been that a bit of a 3-and-D guy. So there's some pieces here that could be really good, but they have to be playing at their top. And, you know, obviously that's anybody. But I think especially with this Mavs team where you can't get average play from guys and still play well, it's almost like everyone's got to be rolling on all cylinders every game. And we just know with the length of the season, that ain't going to happen.
And they've also been shooting horribly from three lately. But the whole thing about Finney-Smith, he's been here for what, 4 years?
He's been here for a while as well.
Four or five years.
Dwight Powell's been here.
But you know, like Maxi Kleber, he's been here for like I'm saying, these role players, they've developed so nicely over their time here, but they've hit their ceiling.
Correct.
Like they're not, Finney-Smith isn't going to become a 15-point guy a night to 17 where he's taking guys off the dribble and becoming something he's not. Kleber's a 3-and-D guy, I guess, but I don't really do. I don't consider him a lockdown defender. He's just a stretch four out there in the corner shooting three. Like these guys have hit their ceiling. What are they going to like? They don't have anything. You need Josh Green to play better or to get minutes to develop. Like how good would Desmond Bane look for the Mavs? That'd be a guy that you desperately need. Like they need these guys to step up and they've just hit their ceiling. And that's where the roster construction is. They're stuck. Like they don't have any. And now they're not even letting Porzingis create. They just send him in the corner. That's what he's become. Just a send it in the corner guy, which isn't a good move. Let him be at the top. But they're, I don't know. I think they're due for a. They've won three games since November 17th. I think they're in for a tough. They're in for some rude awakenings. And like the whole GM thing, like Nico Harrison and Michael Finley and those guys, like, yeah, they're good relationship guys, but are they going to be able to make like franchise altering decisions on moves? Like, yeah, Nico is a great friend of Damian Lillard, but whatever pieces they have, they can't get Dame. He's not a free, like, Dame supposedly likes Nico. Yeah, because he worked for Nike. He's going to like anybody that works for Nike.
Yeah.
So is he going to be able to make moves there? I don't know. I think they're in some trouble.
Well, then how much, you know, faith do you really have in this coaching staff, too, to get guys up and get guys going outside and play outside of their means?
I've said Jason Kidd was a terrible hire from the get-go. I think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm not very confident in that. Like the first game of the season, we just need to have more fun. That's not what you want to hear from your head coach.
Yeah.
We need to have more fun. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Having fun is part of the game, but I mean, come on. That's not going to be the thing that turns it around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think they're in some purgatory here, and you're wasting. This is the same. You could say this is the same thing, but you're wasting Luka's prime years.
Yep.
And I don't want to say I don't want to compare this to the Cavs and LeBron. Like, I don't really think they wasted LeBron's years. They went to a finals in 2007, and then 2009 and 2010, they had the best record in the league. Like, Dan Gilbert wasn't afraid to make overhauls of the roster. They just signed Larry Hughes. He got hurt and was bad. Like, they didn't really waste LeBron's years. They just didn't do a good job of putting enough talent around him. So I guess if that is wasting it, they did it, but they tried. I don't really see a lot of trying sans Porzingis that the Mavs have done to give Luka a good roster, like an overhaul. So, I mean, they're just wasting away this guy. I mean, he's still, 22, 23, but you're wasting away. And who knows, if he gets disgruntled, then the trade comes in and he can want out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably the biggest fear for the Mavs front office and for Mavs fans is you finally have this guy that you, not drafted, but got in the draft. And he's been, almost a seamless transition from Dirk to him, and, having a guy that you can really rely on, think, hey, this dude can take us back to the promised land. And we've seen in the NBA time and time and time again that once the star gets disgruntled, they can pretty much force their way out. And almost every single time the front office listens, because it's like, well, we might as well get something for this guy versus just letting him walk for free. And, I think another year or two of just being average. And I think Luke is going to be, facing that situation. And I think, kind of how his personality is, he's going to lean towards wanting out and trying to force his way out.
Yeah. I mean, they did sign the extension in the offseason, so that's a plus, but,
Don't matter. Talk to Paul George about that. Talk to, there's been plenty of guys that have signed extensions and then a year or two into it, they're like, maybe.
No, I know that, but they don't have to worry about him leaving for free. Like, right. They decide if he goes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. All right. That's going to be it. Remember, everybody, set those alarms early Sunday morning, 7 a.m. championship decider in Formula One over in Abu Dhabi at Yas Marina, a little different track this year. They've made some improvements, so hopefully we get some good overtaking. Coming down to the end should be great out there. I will say this. I think I think Lewis is going to win. As much as it pains me to say it, I think Mercedes, I don't know, they're going to do something. I would say that Lewis has got to be the favorite to win to win the championship, win the race. I hope Max does it, but I think Lewis is going to win, but it still should be a good one. If you want, you can bet. Where is the championship odds here? Lewis is -200 to win the race, so that's pretty much what he's got to be to win the championship. Bovada has Hamilton and Verstappen specials. Well, Hamilton and Verstappen collide with each other. That's even money. I think that's a pretty funny bet there. But I would look. It pains me to say it, but I think Lewis is gonna pull it out. All right. I guess that'll do it for us. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you on Monday.